All right, welcome back to the podcast. My guest today is Jeffrey Carr, who is founder and creator of Taya Global and the creator of the Suits and Spooks events that happen around the country. And as I understand it, we'll be going international this year, later on this year. First of all, give me a little bit of your background, how you got into this industry, and a little bit about Taya Global, what it is you guys do.
Sure. First of all, Ryan, thanks so much for the podcast and the invitation to participate. My background is I used to work for Microsoft in their business intelligence division. And during the course of that career, I found a lot of similarities between problems that companies have with business intelligence and problems that the governments have with mining data intelligence, data-driven intelligence. So I started a blog, and eventually the Russia-Georgia war broke out, and I started a little project called Project Grey Goose, which was a bunch of open-source intelligence experts all getting together and seeing if we could find any clues as to connections between a state government, meaning the Russian government, and their hacker activities. And that's really what led ultimately to my putting together the first Suits and Spooks event. It was clear to me, even back in 2006, when I was at Microsoft, that there really needed to be more conversations held, frank, open conversations between Silicon Valley and Washington, D.C., and especially the intelligence agencies.
Right. So your background was more along the lines of business intelligence, that kind of thing, rather than security.
That's right.
Based on like the emergence of these conflicts and the the obvious involvement of cyber espionage and cyber spying activities, that's how you kind of segued into this Suits and Spooks security world.
Correct. So I'm not a not a computer scientist or a computer engineer. I don't have a degree in computer science or software engineering. I leave that to the hundreds of other hacker conferences that are going on all over the world on an almost daily basis. My focus has always been on the human side and on practical issues with understanding how interconnected the world is and how can we leverage that for improved intelligence, improved collection and analysis of intelligence.
When did you launch Suits and Spooks? Well, how long ago?
Yes, and so that was in the summer. I think it was around May that I sent out the first announcement around Suits and Spooks in Palo Alto.
May last year?
It was in May of 2011.
Oh, 2011, okay.
Yeah, and that was when I conceived of the idea, and I sent out some inquiries to some folks I know to see if they'd be interested, and there was a lot of interest, and so we held it in September of that year. So that was our very first one in Palo Alto in September 2011.
And that was just around the time the term APT was being coined, and people were starting to link all these old Microsoft patching zero-day stuff around extremely targeted attacks to these kinds of nation-state type APT attacks that have now kind of mushroomed. But back then, we were just now getting an understanding of what was really going on.
I think so. I think maybe 2010 might have actually been with the Google attacks.
Right. Aurora.
With Aurora? Right. Yeah. Yeah. But yes, it was a very controversial topic, and this remains controversial, I think, even today.
Absolutely.
As to who's responsible and what do we do about it. So,
right, but that's because, attribution is so easy to get wrong and so hard to get right. And everyone wants to do attribution, and that's where it gets really, really tricky. Let's just get back to Suits and Spooks. One of the things, I just attended my first, so I'm pretty new to the whole Suits and Spooks event style. But one of the things I really like about it is this on-conference, unique format where attendees basically interrupt, challenge a speaker after just about 10 minutes into the presentation. It gets into an actual debate, and it's not just PowerPoint slides and people sitting around listening. the notion of having every presentation be so interactive is missing from a lot of other conferences. Was that a specific plan of yours, or was that something that evolved?
No, that was part of the plan from the very beginning. I always hated, from the time I left Microsoft to the time I started Suits and Spooks, I must have spoken at 100 conferences.
Right.
I was writing my book and just I just hated that part of a conference where the speaker stands up, he runs through 20 minutes of whatever, and everybody just sort of sits back and listens, and there's no interaction. You can't challenge the speaker. I heard so much bullshit coming out of a speaker's mouth in the course of 100 conferences that it just drove me crazy. And so one of the key components of Suits and Spooks is remains to this day the ability for attendees to challenge what they hear and ask to speak. If you're going to speak at one of these things, you got to be prepared to support your presentation with facts or be challenged by it.
Right. Have you ever had fireworks where people really get into it? What would you say is a memorable Suits and Spooks?
Yeah. We've had a few instances, not too many. We've never, ever had a really bad, experience that would cause me to reconsider the policy.
Right. You curate the event yourself with all the speakers are your invitations. There isn't a call for papers process, correct?
Yeah, I do announce a call for papers, and I'm happy to receive those proposals. Mm-hmm. But often I do invite personally speakers, or even more so, I have past speakers who will send me an email and say, "Hey, you should really get this guy to come and talk at your next event."
Right,
and so
right.
That's another way that we do it. We did have the one that you were at, I think, in Monterey.
Correct.
And I can't talk freely about it because our Suits and Spooks events are now under
Shop House
rules.
That was going to be the next. Right. Talk a little bit about those rules, because it's no tweeting, no blogging. I believe you do accept journalists attending, provided they abide by these rules.
Right. So in some cases, though, we don't. Some events will be closed to journalists. It really just depends on the specifics of who's speaking and on what topic.
Right.
But we try to, we want the value to the attendee is to have a conversation that they otherwise could not have
anywhere else.
Anywhere else, right. Mm-hmm. So sometimes in order to do that, we have to have a no press or Chatham House rules environment.
Did you worry about that when you did the transaction to have it be acquired by a media house?
No. We unfortunately, Mike Lennon from Wired Business Media was in complete agreement with me on that point. Mm-hmm. And he's committed to, continuing the tradition in every respect that,
Right. Do you handpick the themes yourself? When we were out in Monterey, there was the Russia-Ukraine conflict, and it kind of had a Russian theme. I believe in the past, if you're in D.C., it's more government-themed. The next one coming up in New York in June 20th and the 21st, I believe it's... we'll have a financial threats, financial services theme. How do you decide, what's hot and what's to be done? Is it based on location? Is it based on, news events of the day?
All of those, I think. It's really a mix. It's not a hard science. I think more of an art than science. And sometimes I get it wrong, and sometimes it's right. Exactly what it should be. It's never really only one theme. Like in New York, we do have a lot of information to share regarding financial, the world financial markets and threats to that part of critical infrastructure. But we also have some other stuff, that's not related that'll be discussed. Same with Monterey. A lot of it did have to do with Russia and Ukraine, but there were still quite a few speakers, like our panel from BAE Systems.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. That delivered some really great information that had nothing to do with the Russian conflict. So
fantastic stuff. It's just one of those things where you sit there and you listen to it and you're like, oh, I wish I could write about this. Talk a little bit about this New York event. Any big confirmed speakers that you have that you're particularly excited about?
We have we always have a great group of speakers. I'm really interested to hear what's going on with Kaspersky, for example, because obviously Kaspersky Lab has been very generous with me and with the Suits and Spooks event in terms of being a sponsor and lending their name to it, and I go back to them because their lab, their researchers do such good work, and as it turns out, we almost always have a Kaspersky researcher speaking.
Right.
In
In
this
the
case,
interest of full disclosure, I work for Kaspersky Lab. I am not at all involved with any of your relationship with Kaspersky Lab and the sponsorship things, but just in the interest of disclosure. And that was not part of the plan for this podcast anyway. We just wanted to talk about
But
it again.
we don't have a lot of sponsors because companies that they have a limited marketing budget, and they want, and understandably, they want to spend that marketing budget on conferences where they can get the maximum amount of exposure. So, and we are a small event. We don't even have an exhibition hall.
Right.
So for every company that does sponsor us, I'm particularly grateful, and they'll do it because they want to associate their name with something that's different, something unique, or something that's really adding value where other events do not. So, it's our sort of contribution to the information security world. So we do have in this case, and in fact, I'm looking forward to listening to this, Kaspersky's U.S. Office. They've just opened up a cleared office in Washington, D.C., under the name Kaspersky Government Security Services. We've got their VP and another member of that office speaking, Adam Firestone and Hillary McMillan. I'm very much looking forward to hearing more about that model and the reason for that strategic decision by Kaspersky Lab. We also have numerous panels on threats to the to the financial sector, including one from Deloitte. We've got four people on that panel. I believe every single one of them has come out of the intelligence community. So, and they'll be speaking about financial intelligence research and illicit financial activities on a global scale. Evan Coleman is who's with Flashpoint Partners. We'll talk about online terrorism financing, what's going on with that today. Evan has consistently done great work along with Josh from Flashpoint Partners over the years. Very solid intelligence and from the coming out of the Middle East from that group. And I'll be involved in moderating a panel on day two, where Joe Weiss, who's long been a industrial control systems expert and actually has his own conference in the fall, and also John Mallory from MIT, will explore, if there is a tipping point on cyber attacks against critical infrastructure.
Right.
And we're a tipping by a tipping point, I mean, where do we move from something that is localized and is just a temporary inconvenience to something that might affect numerous systems, like tipping over a row of dominoes and having catastrophic effects.
Right. It's particularly timely too. I saw, I believe it's ICS CERT put out a report sometime last week confirming that a major U.S. public utility was compromised. I think it was a brute force attack that bypassed security settings, infiltrated systems, and they were able to maintain it. But I thought it was pretty interesting that the ICS CERT was actually confirming that a U.S. public utility had been owned. And there are no details about this, so this is one of the timely topics in my mind. It's not as discussed as it should be.
I agree, and Joe, who I spoke with this morning, his take on this: it's not just that we should be concerned that a public utility, that the industrial controls system of a public utility, are vulnerable. It's that the customers that they serve through are also vulnerable.
Right.
So, and this is one of the things that I'm really looking forward to hearing Joe talk about, is how, let's say, PG&E in California serves a naval base in San Diego, and an aircraft carrier is in dock and is hooked up to PG&E power. Well, there is some harm that can be done from the utility to the customer. So I don't think anybody's ever really explored, you know, what happens if a hacker goes even beyond the utility and uses its connectivity to a very vulnerable, high-risk customers. Right. You know, how far along the line can that harm go?
Right, right. A lot of the underground reports we're hearing, in the corridors, people whispering off the record is mostly related to extortion-type attacks. A utility gets owned, compromised, and attackers just extort them for money. I'm hearing a lot of quiet murmurings around that stuff, but I mean, the point you raise is valid, and I think that, like, this would be one of the panel discussions I'd be looking forward to. If, you know, Joe could go into some of the details about what kind of lasting harm can do to these grids, that would be amazing.
And to speak to that point, let me say that this is where the ability for attendees to question or to challenge what a speaker is suggesting is become so valuable, because, you know, Joe is a controversial speaker, and we may have people in the audience, or even people that are hearing this podcast, that might be saying, well, that's ridiculous. That's, you know, you can't, there's no way to move from a power supplier to a customer and cause harm. There's no way to do that. So we want those people that believe that to come to the event, so that when we do have this discussion, they can add their voice and challenge, you know, what they're hearing a speaker say.
Absolutely.
We had that happen in Washington, D.C. earlier this year on the topic of giving companies the power to attack the attacker, right? To hack back, or to utilize active defense, or whatever politically correct word you want to use to wrap around the idea. There's always lots of controversy around that topic, and we had that happen in D.C. this year. A lot of arguing during those panels.
I heard, have plans to expand this beyond the U.S., I believe into London and even further afield soon. Just briefly talk a little bit about the expansion plans, and how would the conversations and topics and themes differ as you move out of the U.S. and you start to touch on, you know, threats internationally?
Well, the great thing about the great thing about Suits and Spooks is that a lot of the speakers come out of an intelligence agency, so they may not be active. They're often retired. But for people in the private sector, it's much better to chat with somebody who's retired, who just retired. Even somebody like Chris Inglis, who just retired from the number two position at NSA, a great guy who came to our Washington D.C. event. I think we might have been the first event that he actually spoke at post NSA.
Right.
So, and the advantage for attendees is that they actually, you know,
they're freer to speak.
Yeah. If you go to a big event, and you hear General Alexander speaking, or General Hayden speaking, or, you know, anybody who's had that position, rarely, if ever, would you have an opportunity to actually interact, meet them, and have a conversation.
Right.
That
and
happens
even,
all the time.
And even General Hayden's presentations today are so much more interesting than a General Hayden presentation when he was in office, or when he held the job. I mean, he's much more controversial and interesting today from a public perspective, from, people on the outside trying to get a feel for how intelligence works and how these guys think.
Exactly.
I enjoy his keynotes today versus 5 years ago.
Yeah. They're a little bit more free to speak. And so the reason why I'm moving this to London and to Singapore is because I want to bring in people from European nations, people that have served in the intelligence services of foreign nations, or people that are in law enforcement in foreign nations, and have the opportunity for our attendees, you know, to interact with them in the same way that I've been giving people a chance to interact with U.S. folks out of the U.S. intelligence community. Mm-hmm. And also because I think that the only real solutions that we'll find to the problems of attacks against critical infrastructure or attacks against intellectual property are going to be international solutions where there's collaboration between nations. So I'm hoping that by moving this event to Asia and to the EU, that this will help further collaboration between the U.S. and other between companies in the U.S. and other countries.
Where can the listeners find more information on the event?
So suitsandspooks.com will direct them to the latest website.
Got it.
I understand that securityweek.com is working on a new website for us. It's not ready yet, but eventually it will be. So that if
but
you
information
just use that
on
URL.
This information on this New York event is up at suitsandspooks.com.
Suitsandspooks.com, right.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Appreciate the time.
Of course. My pleasure, Ryan.